BBC Radio Berkshire, 7 minutes past 12 now, and it's a cloudy but hopefully still mostly dry day over the Royal County. And here we are, the weekend properly kicking into gear now. It's the afternoon, and of course, just after 12, as always. And I always love this bit because I am a complete and utter unashamed nerd. We catch up with the wonderful gadget detective, Fevzi Turkalp, who really knows his stuff when it comes to tech. You can always tweet him at Gadget Detective. Hello, good afternoon, Fevzi. How are you, my friend? You all right?
Bless you. I'm very well. I made inquiries about whether it was too late to back out, and they said, no, you have to do it with Andy's.
That's it. Yes, I said, you being here is both a pleasure and a contractual obligation. I understand that, Fevzi. That's the way it is. You've got to put up with me. Have you written your Christmas list to Father Christmas yet, with all the gadget sort of, you know, tech and everything that you need?
No, in fact, he sends me a list.
Oh, really? So you're waiting on that to come down from the North Pole, then, are you?
I said, have you been a good Santa today? And if he has, then he may get a gadget or two.
That's it. But only if he sort of emails it or tweets it or uses Telegram or something like that. That's the rule. He can't just send you a letter. That's a bit too old school, surely.
I don't mind. You know, I'm a bit old school myself sometimes.
It's nice getting a proper letter. You never get that. I get sort of still the occasional bill via mail from companies who obviously haven't quite worked out how to send emails yet. And then just basically junk mail, apart from around Christmas time and birthdays, I suppose.
I found my book of stamps the other day. It was a book of 10 stamps.
Yeah.
And I bought it 7 years ago.
Oh,
there's
no.
Some stamps in it. I really don't do stamps, you know.
No.
But mind you, neither do the post office. I mean, they hate to deliver stuff anyway.
It's
anyway, that's okay. Another story.
Let's dive in anyway. Let's start with your tech story of the week, because I know that this is something that a lot of kind of right to repair campaigners have been calling for a long time. And it seems with one of the world's largest companies, they may have got their way. What's all this about?
Well, you know, and I have to say, I take a different view. There's a lot of campaigners who are quite jubilant about this. So let's just explain.
Yeah.
Apple has announced a self-service repair program to allow customers who are, I quote, comfortable, can fix their own devices. Yeah. So the idea is Apple will make available starting early next year in America, and presumably they'll roll it out to the colonies at some point. They're making available, first of all, manuals for certain devices, so you can look at the manual and decide whether you are brave enough to replace the screen, replace the battery, you know, replace the camera module in your iPhone or iPad, and then they're going to roll it out to the some of their Macintosh computers as well.
Wow.
So there's a lot to say about this. So Apple has been under a lot of pressure from, you know, there's a right to repair sort of grassroots movement that's been winning the argument, I would say. And there's a lot of legislatures around the world who have draft legislation already written but not enacted that will force companies like Apple and Samsung and others to allow repairs and facilitate repairs.
I see. So are they just jumping ahead of that legislation then? Are they just trying to get in there a little early?
Yeah, so they're trying to. My view is different, okay, and this is my view, and it's not the BBC's view or anyone.
Of course,
else's.
My
view is that this is a PR stunt, most likely. The devil will be in the detail, but there is. So Apple have form on this, okay? So Apple, there's a number of ways that you can currently get something repaired by Apple. You can get it repaired by Apple themselves.
Yeah.
You can have one of their authorized repairers to do it, or they've got an independent repairer program, and the independent repairer program, I think, is where one should look to see how it's operating at the moment.
Right.
The independent repairer program, first of all, takes away the independence of the repairer, because if they stock any parts to do repairs that Apple don't approve of, then they get kicked off the program. And they actually get audited and banned from the independent repairer program. It's kind of a contradiction in terms if they're independent. Why? Because they can get certain chips that Apple won't supply them with off dead boards. You know, they cannibalize dead boards and take components off them and use them in repairs.
Sure.
Now, why would so there is a number of issues about this. First of all, if Apple or anyone else is serious about repairability has to be one of the design criteria from the get-go, before they build it, when they're thinking about designing it. So, for example, don't be gluing your devices shut. Yeah, make it easy to get to the battery. Don't don't disable Face ID when the screen is replaced. You know, don't. Mm. I would be afraid of opening up an iPhone. Frankly.
Yeah.
I mean, they're glued shut. You have to use a heat gun and a couple of things that look like guitar plectrums to just ease it open and hope you don't do any damage.
So these things are really, really complicated to do then, are they? It's not just a case of they've given you the manual and the components now and it's easy to do. There's only going to be a small number of people who are even going to attempt this, surely.
Yes, and most of those that attempt it probably shouldn't, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then there's a question of what happens to your warranty? I mean, because you may... Yeah, so it may be that, you see, your device may still be under warranty, but you've damaged it in a way that's not covered by the warranty. Are you going to invalidate the remainder of your warranty by undertaking a repair? Because if something else goes wrong, let's say the charging port, who's to say you didn't damage the charging port when you were opening the device? You know.
Yeah, yeah.
And by the way, they're not providing parts for repairing charging ports, which is one of the most common failures of iPads and iPhones and other similar devices. So there is that. Okay, so first of all, the design. Secondly, this is for self-service end user. So this is not what they should be fixing. What they should be fixing is the independent repairer program. And why I say that has to be fixed is, first of all, only certain parts are available, others are not. Also, what parts are available? A lot of repairers are able to replace components on the main circuit board, the motherboard, if you like. So if it's a simple part, it can be a sort of a part costing $5, and you can change that and get it to work, and that becomes an affordable repair and a cost-effective repair for the customer. Apple don't supply those parts. They will sell the repairer a complete circuit board. The results of, and similarly with the screen, let's say your LCD panel, the display section of the screen fails, okay?
Yeah.
An LCD panel is relatively cheap. Apple do not sell or make available an LCD panel on its own. They'll sell effectively the whole top of the laptop.
Sure, yeah?
The screen, whole gubbins around it, the logo, the hinges, the logo on the back, all that. So, and the effect of that is that it often renders a repair uneconomic and the customer won't do it. So in practice, not many of these repairs get done. I'll give you an example that I saw one recently. There was a MacBook Air, which was, I think when it was new, was worth just over $1,000.
Yeah.
And the repair cost for it was over $800.
It's not worth it, is
so
it?
But if you could buy the panel, you could have done that for like $250, $300. I'm quoting dollars because this particular machine was an American machine that I'm thinking
of.
So you have to look at the devil. The devil is in the detail. What parts are they making available and for what price? Are they making only the larger modules available or the components? I suspect the former. And how much are they charging for them? Because there's also Apple tax to go on top of that, in my opinion.
Sure.
So those are the issues. So one is design your machine so they're repairable. It wasn't so long ago that you could just use your fingernail to pop the back off a smartphone and change the battery. Now Apple started gluing them shut. Now Samsung glued them shut. Everyone glues them shut. It's not necessary to make it slim or waterproof. There are ways of designing it if you want to design it so that those parts are still serviceable. Then make the right parts available at the right price and make all the parts available, not just the ones that you want to make. They're providing, so, you know, things like, so for phones, it will be camera modules, batteries and screens. But as I say, not charging
not
ports
the, not
or any
the charging
of the other things
ports.
That go wrong.
Just as a final thing, on this, Fevzi, I won't offer an opinion myself, but just to sort of give the other side, just because it'd be interesting to hear what your response would be to this. Aren't we just in a time where we generally just don't really want to try and do this sort of thing ourselves? We live in a time when, you know, the fridge goes, the TV goes on the blink. It's all just always about getting a new one. That might not be the right attitude to have, but generally we do that, and we just don't want to start opening something up and fiddling about with it and everything else. And you know, that's just the way that we are now. Is that fair?
Well, look, I think you have to tease out the different points here. I would no more repair my smartphone than I would repair my car.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
It's not for me to, but I would want both to be repairable at an economic price. Obviously, sometimes that's not possible.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But what I wouldn't want is my mechanic or my independent repairer to be stymied by the manufacturer for lack of parts and threats if they do repairs that are unapproved, even though they're perfectly legitimate repairs.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think, look, the good thing is Apple is kind of saying that right to repair is a good thing. Now they have to do it in practice. Let them prove me wrong. If they bring out a fantastic self-service repair scheme, I will eat my hat. But I do point out to people that until recently, Apple was saying it was dangerous for people to attempt repairs on their own program, on their own devices. So, and I'm not sure that having a manual is necessarily going to make that much less dangerous. So,
yeah.
So you know, you've got people like iFixit and other people jump, you know, advocates jumping up and down with joy. I think that's premature. I think that, you know, they're trying to head off legislation. And I just don't hope this is not enough. I hope that legislation will come in the UK, around the European Union, in America, elsewhere, that gives us the right. Because the trend in all of this is, it's bad enough with software. You don't buy software, you buy a license permission to use it under terms that they can change. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nowadays, we're moving to the point where you don't own even the hardware. You buy a phone. You're almost buying a license to use the phone. You have to use it and treat it and repair it in the way that, the manufacturer says, and that's not right. If you spend the better part of £1,000 on a device, it should be yours.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting stuff. No doubt we'll rumble on. Our gadget detective, and he's got not one, but two gadgets of the week from the same manufacturer of the same kind of product category. Is that fair, Fevzy?
Yeah, they're very similar. So I just thought we'd cover them together and explain the differences. So both of them come from a company called 12 South, 12 spelt out in letters. 12 South, they're most famous for making Apple accessories. They make some really high-end stands for Apples and other devices as well.
Yeah, right.
So that's their main thing. But they do a range of devices called AirFly, A-A-A-I-R Fly. And there's the AirFly Pro and there is the AirFly USB-C. And those are the two we're looking at today. They do similar but importantly different things. So I will explain. First of all, the name AirFly is because these are devices that are designed to give wireless Bluetooth connectivity, typically to headphones, for devices that don't have wireless capability. So maybe they've got a headphone, 3.5mm headphone socket or some sort of other audio output. You can connect to them. So, and what it does is it allows you to use headphones wirelessly. And the traditional use for this was, you know, when you're in an airplane and you've got the in-flight entertainment system, it's got a headphone jack, it allows you to use wireless. Now, what's the big deal with that? Well, one of the tricks that, so it doesn't have to be just in-flight entertainment, can be gym equipment. Oh. So again, you don't necessarily want to wire, you know, you have like those runners and things. I've never been to a gym in my life, but I understand that, you know.
Yes, they do have them, Fevzy. Yes, I promise.
No. I'm you know, I live up to my stereotype. I really have never been inside the gym. Or gaming devices, television sets. Again, that's really useful, you know, if you don't want to disturb someone. And the TV is across the other side of the room. You use wireless headphones. It's great. They've got a range of about 10 meters or 33 feet. It's Bluetooth 5. So that's the thing. So the other benefit is that you can connect two sets of wireless headphones at the same time. So you can share it. So again, if you've got a device with, let's say, you know, a tablet with a 3.5mm jack and two kids in the back of the car, for example, they can each have their own wireless headphones, and you know, the screen can be put fairly between them, and you don't have to suffer the noise of, you know, SpongeBob whatever it is, you know, so you don't have to put up with all of that. The other thing so we're talking about the Pro version now. The Pro version does something which the other one doesn't.
Right.
It not only allows you to receive audio wirelessly, you can transmit audio from, say, your smartphone, tablet, gaming device to any device with an auxiliary input. So, for example, let's say you've got speakers, soundbars, you've got a rental car, and it's got boat sound system or anything with an input socket on it, you can then wirelessly, you know, cast or stream from your device to that. So that's a really nice trick. So you can put it in send or receive mode. Battery life is over 16 hours. The quality is very good. Now, this is a bit technical, but it uses something called aptX or aptX low latency.
Right.
Which means that, first of all, you get good sound quality. The way it compresses the audio for wireless sending and receiving is efficient. And low latency is there's not a big delay. So if you're watching a film on a tablet, the sound shouldn't be, you know, out of sync. So that's kind of important as well. List price is $49.99. I saw it on a well-known website today for $46.98. 4 stars out of 5. The USB-C version has a couple of important differences.
Yeah.
It has a USB-C socket, so it's for things like iPad Pros and the more modern tablets that have got USB-C or other devices with USB-C. Use it for that. It's only for receiving. It does support two sets of headphones, but you can't transmit via it. It's only for receiving. It has 20 hours plus of battery life, and again, it uses the same high quality codecs, and it's compatible with pretty much all wireless headphones and iPads and USB-C tablets. That one, interestingly, has got a list price of a shade under £60. But
yeah,
at the same well-known website, I saw it on a special deal today. It was like one of their Black Friday, pre-Black Friday deals, $44.99. So the device that was actually meant to be more expensive is actually a little bit cheaper. But you should buy what you need, because one's got a USB-C connector on the end, the other one's got a 3.5mm jack on it. But they're both wonderful. 4 stars for each of them.
Excellent.
Very much recommended.
Okay, thank you, Fevzi. That might be going on some people's wish list to Santa then in that case. How can people get in touch with you if they have their own little gadget dilemma? What's the best way to do that?
Well, they can't. I live in a cave. But if they really want to, come and find me on Twitter at Gadget Detective. Or if you want to see what else I get up to, you go to www.gadgetdetective.com.
Brilliant, Fevzi. You're an absolute star. That is the brilliant Fevzi Turkap, who will be back at the same time next week here on BBC Radio Berkshire.